why would we bother doing a podcast?
I don't know.
Yeah, we think about that a lot. That would just be a print artist?
Better.
Leave a comment that's hashtag this is awkward.
Hey guys, real quick, we want to give a massive, huge shout out and thank you to our new members for our Buy Me a Coffee page. You guys are what keeps us going. We can't thank you enough. But to Greg Moquin, Tier Jackson, Cammy the Fox, and John Velez, thank you guys so much for stepping up and becoming members and getting access to all kinds of cool stuff. Also to those of you who have sent support and bought us coffees. Indie Comics Dispatch, Stephen Prince, and Hector Barrero. That means a lot to us as well. It is what keeps the podcast going and what allows us to grow the business as well. So, if you guys want exclusive access to cool merch, a behind-the-scenes show, the way to do that is to become a member over at buymeacoffee.com/beardsandcomics. We have 6 slots left that are getting a super special item. If you want to see what it is, go over to our Catalyst Comic Studio Facebook or Instagram page, and you'll see the post with a really cool item. It's 6 more people. Our first 10 are getting it, so 6 more people that become members, you'll be getting into. So, think about it. And it's, memberships as low as $5 a month. So check it out. buymeacoffee.com/beardsandcomics.
Matt, isn't podcasting free?
Aaron, don't be an idiot.
A bit cruel, but a lot of people assume that all it takes is time.
It does take time. Which for us is time dedicated to providing content rather than working on all the other stuff we have going on.
You know, that's why I'm a big fan of Buy Me a Coffee. They let anyone jump on there, show some financial support quickly and easily, or if they're feeling real crazy, become a member.
That is money we could use to help grow our content, marketing, equipment, and keep growing the business.
Our shows are free to listen to, but this is a way for anyone to get exclusive merch and even an extra monthly show called Behind the Red Door.
To show support and keep us making great content, visit buymeacoffee.com/beardsandcomics.
Again, that's buymeacoffee.com/beardsandcomics. That's our ad.
Thompson, that's not feeling it. All right, I have our names on the right side. That's good. Last time we were off. Luckily, we knew them.
Good thing I knew my name.
That's right. Not for them. For us. For them.
All right. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Beards and Comics Podcast. We have Doug Wagner not in the studio with us.
In spirit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, in not spirit. In spirit. I mean, he's there.
I mean, he's here.
He exists.
Oh, that's true. The ghost of Doug Wagner is not.
You know what? We have Doug Wagner in the studio with us.
how weird can we make this?
I don't know. We can keep it going. I mean, don't put it past us.
All right.
So we talked about weather before we got on, everybody. So we got that part out of the way for you. But Doug, how's everything going out your way, man?
Oh, it's going pretty well, man. Everything's, it's numbers are down on COVID. I'm vaccinated, so things are good.
Still didn't go outside today.
Nope, still haven't been outside today. Yep.
It's awesome. So our show is a little bit different. I don't think I said anything to you before. So for everybody that's listening, I was on a show with Doug the week before last with Indie Comics Dispatch. And after we got off that, I was like, we need him on Beards and Comics. So our show is very much geared toward people that are getting into the industry or people that have been in it and just want to hear the other side from creators and kind of like the background side and all that. So that means we can, I'm going to be honest, like there are a couple of questions on here that might be a little hard hitting.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because we decided recently to reformat the show a little bit, and you're the first guest with the reformat. So I was like, okay, I'll throw a couple, a couple.
Yeah.
Let's see. nothing too crazy, but yeah. I want to make sure that we start off with your creative history, kind of where everything started, up to where you are now. So what did all that look like?
Oh man, I mean, if you want to go way back to discovering who you're a writer and those kind of things, it's an interesting journey, because I think I started writing my first stories when I was five. Now, I didn't know, realize I was writing stories. You know, it was just like you're a five-year-old until you're running around creating stuff. And I was a weird kid, lived out in the middle of nowhere. So, you know, there was a lot of like, I had to make up my friends. That's where things kind of started. Discovered comics probably when I was about seven at a 7-Eleven on a spinner rack, you know, and started with the things, you know, back then that were coming out like Casper, loved the Flintstones back then. Then kind of graduated to like Fantastic Four and the Avengers. And then probably in my high school years, I discovered the X-Men. That's back when Claremont and John Byrne were doing it. And that changed my life. And my senior year in high school, I was sitting next to a dude who started drawing like characters on his you know, on a piece sheet of paper, and it ended up being Kelly Hamner, you know, who ended up being like one of my best friends. And we just kind of started playing around and creating our own characters and that kind of stuff, you know, and doing the typical thing where, you know, you sit around and bash everybody else and don't understand why comics aren't better than they should be, you know, kind of thing. But, you know, you find out it's not as easy as it looks.
And then at 17, I could do that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, this is easy. You know, and at 17, you know, kind of came to the conclusion like, hey, I think I want to write comics. And much to the chagrin of my parents, you know, they didn't like that idea at all. Then it took a while. You know, I mean, Cully broke in to DC, I think, when he was 19. I got my first gig probably when I was about 25 with Malibu Comics. And, you know, just as soon as I got everything rolling there, Marvel bought them and closed them down. So
thanks, Marvel. Thanks, guys.
Then there was a setback for about 5 years where it took me to kind of recuperate from that.
Yeah.
And so you got fired from Marvel. Got it.
Basically, I got fired. Yeah. And then my friend Kevin Gardner, you know, who's the president of 12 Gauge Comics, he and I were sitting around in the backyard of his house one day, and we kind of said, "Hey, why don't we just do it ourselves?" And so it kind of hit on me like, yeah, I don't need permission from anybody to write comics. I can just start doing it.
Right.
And so, you know, that's kind of where things started. And we just, you know, we had some friends, with Cully and Brian Stelfreeze and, you know, a couple other people that we were friends with. We're like, hey, let's just put together comics and see what happens. And that was probably 2004. And then since then, dude, it's just me just, you know, writing comics. Like, I just do it. You know, it's like, you know, you got friends in the industry after years. That always helps. You know, so did some stuff with DC Comics, and that was mostly from Hank Connaults, who really helped me out there. And he's like, hey, I want to get you over here writing, you know, and then the rest of it's just plowing your own way. You know, it's like, hey, I'm going to write comics whether anybody wants me to or not.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't know your history went back quite as far as kind of starting things off. Kicking off in high school and stuff. So it's pretty interesting. So legend,
right?
Exactly. So the first question that's a little bit more of a, philosophical, metaphysical. I don't know. You can choose.
That's a big word.
Yeah.
Okay. You writers figure that out. I'm an artist. That's a big word. I don't know how to
just
draw
tell
that.
You what to draw.
Yeah. I don't know. Just give me a panel.
What is creativity to you?
Ooh. I mean, for me, the minute you say that word, there's just a lot of joy that comes in my soul immediately, because I love creativity. And so creativity to me is kind of having fun, almost daydreaming. And that's regardless of what medium or media you're talking about. I mean, music, film, TV, you know, painting, whatever it might be, like, you're going to sit down and come up with this idea, and, you know, whether the muses, whatever you believe in, however that works, like, come and give you something, and you start going, hey, I want to take this and make it something fun or scary or meaningful, you know, whatever those things might mean. And then you're like, and at the same time, like, I'm going to use this fun to maybe send a message. And so creativity to me is like this, just over, like, I love it. Like, when you're sitting around just kind of like riffing with friends, you know, and that's, again, you know, I'm going to equate it a little bit to music. Like, you're sitting around and you're like, hey man, let's like just riff. And that's the fun part. Like, you're just no holds barred. Like, we're going to create, and there's no bad ideas. Sometimes bad ideas end up being great ideas, you know, just have fun with it. And to me, it's just fun. Like, it's just playing. creativity is, you know, not anything different than being in the playground with your friends going, hey, we're going to play Star Wars.
Right.
Right.
So to take it to that kind of level, do you think that it's creativity is natural?
Man, that's, you know, this is always a tough one.
Not being good with it. Like not being good at it, but like, you know, to take it back, you know, like you said, all the way back to like, you know, playing Star Wars with your friends and stuff when you're kids. Like to what extent would you say like maybe it's a natural thing for humanity?
I think it's in different levels. My wife, who's very like academic, she's very book smart, you know, those, you know, creativity isn't something she normally plays with. It's not in her wheelhouse. She doesn't think about it. She didn't play like necessarily I played, you know, hers was very reality based. And so she didn't do a lot of the imagining and playing Star Wars. Hers was like, hey, let's go play sports. Let's go swimming. It was very, you know, there wasn't a lot of imagination going on in what they were doing.
Right.
So I think it's, I don't know if it's completely natural for everyone. I think it's, you know, I think it's almost just like if you related it to like sports, is everybody an athlete? Well, everybody can just run out and play Frisbee. That doesn't mean everybody's going to be good at it. And so, yeah, I think it's different varying levels. And to explain it, you know, and how the brain's wired, obviously nobody's ever figured that out. So, yeah, it's an interesting concept to think about. You know, it's like, is creativity a natural thing for everybody? And, you know, because obviously there's varying degrees. I don't know if you guys have ever like listened to Neil Gaiman talk.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I took his master class, and Neil Gaiman is hands down a genius. Like his, you know, we can talk about his comics, but his short story stuff is like next level, like, oh my God, I'll never be able to do anything with this.
It's like his brain's wired different.
Yes. But I'll say, I don't think he knows how he does it.
Uh-huh.
You know, going through his master class, I was like, he can teach me the basics of writing. Like, you know, hey, here's three act structure. Here's exercises you need to do. I don't think he can teach you how to be creative like he's creative.
Right. And I guess to an extent, any creative person, you can give basics, but nor should, I guess, you really strive to be just like another creator, you know? But yeah, it's an interesting conversation. I didn't think we were going to springboard into.
I feel like that's one of the, I feel like that's the most important part about being creative is understanding that I'm never going to have Neil Gaiman's brain. That's why I like Neil Gaiman's work, you know, because like that's inside of his head. Like I would never think of the same things any other artist. Like I might, you know, like anybody can have the same panel, but you're not going to draw it the same way.
No,
you know, there's no way. That's the point of style. Like your hand's not going to do the same thing that person's hand would. You know, like writing is the same aspect of that level of creativity, and just
so creativity is interpretive.
Yes, very much so.
Basically, and that is one of those reasons why like it's good. I mean, as an artist, you have your heroes, but you don't just study one.
Yeah,
you have to. Hey, I like the way this person draws this part, or I like the way this person does backgrounds. Mm-hmm. I like the way they tell their stories or their compositions. And I'm sure writing is probably the same way.
Oh, yeah, for
you
sure.
Know, like,
yeah, we could come up with the same premise for a sentence, and I guarantee all three of us would write it differently.
Right. It's actually one of the reasons that I get a little bit aggravated when people say things like, you shouldn't bother writing superhero comics because they've all been done. But I feel that way about every genre. Like, what story's not been told?
Right.
That's not the point. The point is, what voice are you giving your story? And I guess it hits me different because we do make superhero comics. But in the end, I think it's so much
down,
more.
Man.
It's so much more about the creative voice behind it than it is about what the actual structure of the story is. Of course, that stuff is stuff that can be learned, but the voice of the story is from the creator.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, just look at all the different iterations we see of, say, Superman. I mean, how many different can we talk about Jupiter's Legacy and the Bad Boy, you know, Bad Boys, or not Bad Boys, but what's the one, it's on the Amazon with
The Boys.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's Superman versions in all of those.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but they're all different voices. Like, they're completely different characters.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's just told in a different way.
Yeah.
So when we talk about your projects, what are the motivations behind your projects? And you can take it title by title if you want. I'd be very interested to know what some of your titles, where the inspiration was. So, yeah, I mean,
That's always an interesting one. That's a tough one. It's, you know, obviously with the creator-owned stuff, that kind of comes out of thin air. You never know where those are going to come from. But plastic, it was a road sign, you know, just driving down, going on a road trip from Atlanta to Baltimore for the Baltimore Comic-Con, with Brian Selfries and Eric Layton. And we passed the Virginia sign, you know, when you enter the state. And instead of there being a welcome to Virginia sign, it was buckle up, Virginia. And if you read plastic, that's the last line of the book. So, you know, like the whole inspiration came from this road sign. And so, you know, where things kind of sneak in there is weird. But the Batman book that, you know, with Legends of the Dark Knight, I really wanted to do something different. And I wanted to take it back to him just being a detective. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I wanted to create this villain that had, it was more on, inspired by manga and anime, to where the villain actually, you cared about what, you know, you understood his plight. It wasn't just that he was a bad person. There was also like, oh, wait a minute, if I was in his shoes, I might do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you know, whether I was successful or not on that one's always debatable, you know, because there's a lot of people that were like, you know, hey, why did you write a detective story for Batman? And I'm like, you do understand the original.
I'm sorry. What's the name of the company?
Yeah, exactly.
You're talking about the world's greatest detective?
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, each one's completely unique. I think lately what I've been diving into is, the inspiration needs to be, what do I want it to be? Like, I'm pursuing this, like, I think I can do better. I think I can write a more disturbing story or a more horrific horror, you know, and diving into that. And so there's this pursuit of, like, can I make a more, you know, horrific horror than I've done before kind of thing? And what does that mean? You know, obviously, you know, we can dive deep into that too. It's just like, you know, what is writing a more horrific horror comic entail?
Right.
You know, go ahead.
It's an interesting discussion that I think Matt and I have had, because we did Welcome to Everville, which we pitched to people as a horror dark fantasy, but it leans quite a bit more dark fantasy. But then now when I go back and look at it, I'm like, okay, yeah, I might be a little bit sick. It's a little bit, I probably went a little bit farther than maybe even I intended to, but to think about it in the level of creativity, I don't know if you feel similar, and if you don't, that's fine, because we all have different brains. But for me, it was like, a lot of things I do in my real life and in my normal day to day, and then like, outside of this, like I also write music and all that kind of stuff, but I wanted to explore that darkness a little bit and see how I could actually, it's almost like cleansing where it like gets it out of your system. It's like everybody has that side to them. Like, this is a different way for you to explore it. I don't know if you look at it similar to that, because you're saying things like, you know, I would like to see how much further I could push things. So, so what does that look like for you?
Well, I mean, you know, I have fun playing in the dark side, you know, of those kind of things. And like, you're right. Like, there's a part of me that kind of like goes, hey, if you did this to my family, what would I do to
you? Yeah. Cause you're not a dark person at all. I mean, like just talking to you and stuff, like you don't get that vibe off of you at all. So why it's interesting when people that don't give off that vibe are like, no, I can go dark.
I mean, you don't have a lot of money, but you, who has very special set of skills.
That's right.
Well, I mean, I think there is, I mean, I do have a dark side, but it comes out not when you threaten me, but when you threaten somebody I care about.
Yes.
Or something I care about. So I completely understand John Wick. Because if you hurt one of my pets, I will hunt everybody you love down. Right. Like, I will make you pay for the rest of your life. So,
you know, you hear that, people?
Yeah. It's like, this week we had a little bit of somebody was tweeting about, you know, the ICE comic that we wrote back in 2011 and started threatening some of the creators. Mm-hmm. And I was fine until they started threatening other people. I was like, listen, if you want to come to me, that's great. Like, if you want to say you're going to harass me at a show, that's fine. You start talking about threatening my friends that worked on the book with me, then I have a problem. You know, so like, then the dark side comes out and you're like, you know, normally I would never get in a fight at a con. I wouldn't even think about it. But if somebody took a swing at, say, somebody like Brian Stelfreeze or Jose Holder because they drew a comic book, there's going to be a riot. Like, it's going to break out crazy.
It's so interesting to hear that side too, because I've had the discussion with people before, and it's like writers, we are typically the bigger empaths. In that same sense of the, like you were just describing, like, it's one thing to say stuff about me, but when you come after people that I work with or people that I love and care about, like, you're going to see a side of me that's not normally out there.
And it's interesting because then, like you said, then that dark side comes out and it's like, you know, I'll simmer on it, you know, and it's like, okay, so I'm going to take this person in the back alley because they hurt my friend, or God forbid, they killed my friend. I might disappear with them for a while and, you know, slowly skin their body kind of thing. You know, that's the dark side of me coming out. You know, you're like, I'm going to make you, I'm going to torture you to death kind of stuff.
And so, and most people wouldn't say it, but when you're a creator, you're like, oh, it's a comic book. I can do it. I can do that. I can go that far with it.
My new book called Pig Farm. Got it.
That's fascinating. I like getting into like the brain side of stuff. What about your newest stuff? Like, how did that stuff come about?
Are you talking about like River and Yumi and Thomas River is an interesting one. We were in a Hollywood pitch meeting, and they didn't like what we were pitching. And Brian Stelfreeze is in there, and Brian's like, "Well, I got an idea you might like." And so Brian just pitched a single scene, and they went, "Oh my God, I love it! Tell us more about it." And he's like, "If you want to know more about it, you have to pay us." Well, the secret was Brian didn't have anything else.
Of course.
But I just had this one scene. So he came to me and he's like, listen, now they're interested. Let's make a comic book about this. You know, that's all.
I messed up. I need you to run with this.
Whatever gets said in there, just go with it.
Listen.
Yeah. Well, it's not a mess up thing. We kind of operate on a different level of like, if you can get them interested in something, we have the faith in ourselves that we can create a book they'll like.
Absolutely. Right.
So he had this one single scene and we kind of created it from there. Brian was definitely more on the, like a more serious, almost like Without Remorse, James Bond style of thing. For me, it was a little bit too dark and serious. And so I was like, oh, you know, I kind of want to add a little bit of fun here. And a lot of my stuff is about love and family. And so I wanted to inject that kind of stuff into River. And so Brian and I just kind of bounced ideas back and forth until we came up with like the story we wanted. And so that one was fairly easy because he came to the table with kind of like the beginnings of it all. With Yumi, that was, again, that was more of like a Hoyt Silva's idea. He kind of like, we were kind of bouncing some stuff around and said, hey, we want to work together. And he'd had a conversation with his wife the night before about James Bond. And, you know, she kind of said, hey, listen, there's no characters like that for women. When I was growing up, you know, there's no like, you know, here's this, you know, several movie length character that we can identify with, that we have fun with.
What the heck was
that? So I told you guys I was there in spirit.
Haunting them.
And so he kind of wanted to flip it. He's like, hey, what if we took this from a female perspective versus the male perspective? And so that was just like, and I was like, well, listen, I just want to go nuts. Like, I just want to have fun with this book. We're doing it on our own for free. Like, let's go nuts. Like, let's do everything people can't tell us we can do, you know? And so that one was, then it just took off on its own and we had ton of fun with that one. And then a vinyl that's coming out in June from Image. The beginnings of that actually came from Eric Stevenson. So I was sitting down, we were talking about Plastic, and I pitched him the sequel to Plastic, and he's like, sequels don't do real well in comics. What if he did something like a trilogy, and, you know, it was like Plastic and Leather and, you know, those kind of things. And so I started thinking about it. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then I started thinking about, I'd had this idea of basically like, what if the Avengers were serial killers? And And so, you know, kind of put it into the Plastic universe and said, okay, what would the next one look like? And that's where Vinyl came from.
Nice. Third one's going to be latex. sorry, I had to do it. I know we've had people on that have, you know, kind of been through DC, been through Image, and I don't know why. I guess it's failure as a host. We've never asked the question of what that pitch process looked like, because I know people want to know that. What is that kind of layout like?
I mean, with DC, most of the time, you kind of like, you either get just flat out hired. They're like, hey, we want you to do this. But the times you are going to pitch to them, you're honestly like in a room full of, not when I say room, I mean that figuratively. Right. Let's say World of Warcraft. There was 20 writers trying out for World of Warcraft.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to write a first issue of what you think this idea would be. And then Blizzard goes through all 20 and they pick. And so I know, you know, sometimes you have writers.
That's not terrifying at all. It's okay.
No, that's not terrifying at all. I know that, like, you know, when they did the New 52, they had multiple writers kind of like pitching each project. The downside was every editor didn't tell the writers that they were in a competition. So I know that rubbed some of the writers, you know, some of the long-term writers, it rubbed them a little bit wrong. But, you know, I think if you're ever asked to pitch to Marvel or DC, you just need to realize, like, there might be multiple people that you're up against of varying levels, you know, and they're just kind of like, hey, do we want a new person that's good, you know, that maybe we have to sell? Or do we want to take somebody like Neil Gaiman and just have him run with it because we know he'll sell books, mm-hmm. you know? So you don't know who you're up against in that room. With Image, most of the time, I've written plenty of pitches. Eric seems to respond better to in person. So, you know, for years I would like send him an email and say, hey, I realize we're going to be at the same con. Do you have 30 minutes for me to like pitch you some ideas? And so usually when I pitch to Eric, I have at least a half an issue completely done. That's, you know, penciled inked, colored, lettered, ready to go. So that can help me sell it versus me trying to do it with just talking. You know, like, hey, I got this idea. Right. What do you think?
Right.
It's like, no, let me show you what I'm thinking. Here's the first issue. And he responds really well to that. Honestly, now, even when I'm doing with Vinyl, I didn't tell him about it until I had the first issue completely done. And then I sent it to him and I was like, hey, here's what I'm thinking. Put together a one-page pitch, you know, like, here's the log line. Here's the story, you know, and then obviously some artwork afterwards. So totally, you know, it's two different ways where, like, with Image and probably Boom and Dark Horse, you're going to have to put together more of a formal pitch document. DC and Marvel are usually just going to ask you to like, write, you know, either write a quick synopsis or a script.
That's interesting.
Yep. Because obviously with DC and Marvel, like, they're not going to read your unsolicited materials anyway. You know, it's like, hey, you know, it's like, hey, I want to write Batman. Here's my script. They're like, no, we're not reading this.
Right. That's interesting. I hope people kind of take that to heart. Yeah, those pitch letters, I see a lot of people, they'll talk about, you know, guys, pray for me. I'm pitching an Image. And then, like, they'll put some of their pitch letter, and it's just like, I mean, at least like proofread your stuff.
Exactly. Yeah,
you got a lot.
I'll say, I just did a pitch last week and I probably spent 50 hours on a one-page pitch. And so that's like concept.
You hear that, guys? I was about to say, I want to cut that and loop it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like reading it over and over again. Did these sentences flow? You know, and I mean, obviously when you're doing a one-page pitch and you're trying to put your entire story into two or three paragraphs, it's going to feel choppy. It's going to be hard. But that's the process. And, like, if you can't do it, like, then, you know, you're not going to be successful with a pitch. Like, you have to put the, like you said, grammar and punctuation has to be on point. They're looking for a reason to say no. They're hoping right. that you're sending them the best pitch ever. They're hoping when they open it that it's the best thing they've ever read. But at the same time, they're like, they want to make sure you have the qualifications to do it. And if you can't write a sentence, they're not going to hire you to write a book. Like it's going to be too much work for them.
Yep. Yeah. They don't have time to hold everybody's hand.
Yeah.
And come in and make a book and teach and train them, you know, like yeah. once you've hit that level, it's definitely like, you know, you've already have to have something under your belt. I feel like yeah. that's what a lot of people don't understand is the fact that they want to jump right to Marvel and DC. They want to jump right to Image without ever having done a comic book or
right.
sequential art or a full script or anything. And mm-hmm. I just don't understand how that's possible.
Yeah, take a look at the industry. Like, I mean, look at most of Marvel and DC's writers. Mm-hmm. I would bet if you look at it, like at least half of them did indie work before they actually became big Marvel and DC guys.
Right. Yeah.
Brian Michael Bendis, I mean, indie yeah. books for years. Matt Fraction, Kelly Sue DeConnick. You know, I mean, the list goes on and on of all these people that like did indie books maybe for years mm-hmm. before they actually got asked by Marvel or DC to do work. And, you know, you see some out of the gate people make it, you know, get their stuff picked up at Image. But if you ever see their pitch packet, you understand why, because right. it's gorgeous. Like most of the time they've worked in another industry, like say animation or TV.
Right.
And
right.
so they understand like, oh, this has to be a really nice looking piece for Eric to even consider putting this book out.
We've been noticing a lot of creators coming in from television, mm-hmm. Like script editors and stuff like that. And then, you know, when you're in that world, they're going to ask you every once in a while if you could build pitches to mm-hmm. For your own stuff. And so we've started, you know, some of those people we talk to and we're like, oh, man, we vibe well with these people. So now we're... Mm-hmm. close with them, and it's another one of those interesting things to hear about where they come from a different perspective of like the person I'm thinking of in particular that I talked to quite a bit is Carly Nappy, who does Duplicant, and she used to be a script editor, and her series was going to be a pilot that she pitched, and then she moved so oh, wow. she moved all the way here to the East Coast and started it as a comic book series. And it's a fantastic series, and you can tell she was a script editor. And yeah. so interesting to watch that side coming the other way from somebody that didn't grow up in comic books, but maybe grew up like, I want to work in television and then move toward comics. So that the whole industry is different now. You know, like you were just saying, you have to have a good pitch package together. Whereas, you know, when Marvel and DC were, you know, a few decades back, it was people that were working there, you know, they're like, oh, I get a chance to pitch stuff now. I've been in the newsroom for however long. It's not that way anymore.
No, I mean, think about like, I mean, then we'll throw in web comics,
right?
You know, and like you said, TV, and the fact that there's so many TV writers. And so now Marvel and DC can go like, who do we think has the chops to write mm-hmm. the Falcon, you know, or Captain America or Bucky?
Yep.
Like, let's look around and see who's got a unique voice, and that whether that's web comics or independent comics or TV or film, you know, there's just so many things, so many more places for them to choose from than they've had, you know, like you said, a couple of decades ago. You know, now they're like, oh, well, let's go ask this web comic person. They're doing some cool stuff. Like, let's see what they would pitch.
Doug Wagner is telling you guys, just be yourselves.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And it's not just, just New York, or it's not just, yes. you know, wherever they were, you know, like anywhere all over the world. If you're just yep. good, you're competing with them now. That's the good and terrifying thing for anybody out there.
I know you had a question. I don't remember exactly how you phrased it.
I'm sure I don't remember either,
but I'll move to this one that comes okay. with this. What was the feeling like when you got that the first time it was accepted, like a pitch?
Yeah.
What was that whole thing like?
Oh man, it's always even to this day, it's the same for me, it's the same feelings. Like I'm ecstatic. Like I'm blown away that somebody would accept it, you know, kind of thing. And you're just like, oh my God, I finally got something accepted. you know, even to this, like I said, to this day, like when they, you know, Eric finally gave the go on vinyl, I'm like, oh, thank God, you know, I put a lot of hard work into making this happen. You know, thank God, you know, something's going to come out. Right. And then mixed with the absolute terror of, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? Do I think I can pull this off? Yeah. This mix of like, thank God I finally made it. You know, there's some validation there that somebody accepted, at least said yes to my pitch. And then there's right. like, oh my God, can I deliver on the pitch I just sent in?
Right. I think that was my question. It was, you know, from, I guess even at the small level that we're at, like we keep thinking that, you know, like that imposter syndrome, is that always there for you? It's always yes. going to be there, right? Okay. Yep. I'm just making sure that we're not just, I mean, I feel like that's everybody everywhere and everybody needs to go ahead and accept it.
Every
like,
time somebody gives a compliment about something that we've done, I just assume they're lying or being nice. I don't know.
That's where I'm horrible at a show because people will walk up cold, right? And they'll go, why should I buy your book? And I'm going like, well, you shouldn't.
Right. You know, like, see, I feel like that's the creator in all of us. We're just like, I was there making it. Like, yep. I put these pencil lines down and I know all the mistakes. I know where my thought process and how much I struggled. So it's obviously can't be good, right? You know, and as opposed to like somebody just enjoying it for what it is. So I don't know.
One of my best friends in the world is Brian Stelfreeze, and we talk almost weekly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I'm talking to Brian, I realize like he's already a legend, right? I mean, you know,
right. 50, yeah, 50
straight Shadow of the Bat covers,
right.
You know, everything he, you know, basically almost reinvented Black Panther.
Right.
And when you talk to him, he can't believe anybody pays him to draw. You know, so even somebody at Brian's level is, he still suffers horribly with imposter syndrome. And you're right. Like it's just something you have to accept. I think we all fight like wishing it go away, but I know with me, dude, it's almost like every keystroke.
Yep.
You know, oh, that's the wrong word. It's just the Doug. Move on. like, there's not another word for this.
I like to tell Matt that there's this movie. I can't remember the name of it, but the plot of the movie was this group of friends. One of their friends has cancer, and so he only has a few months left. And so the whole pitch of the movie is them trying to break into George Lucas's place to get to see The Phantom Menace because he won't be around when it comes out. And so it ends up, he gets to see The Phantom Menace. And then when it actually releases, the rest of the group finally gets to go to the theater. And right at the end of the movie, they're sitting there and it comes up and it starts. And the guy looks at the other guy. He's like, after everything they've been through, he's just like, what if this sucks? And then it just cuts to black. And that's how I feel every time I put out, like finish my part of a book. I'm like, what if this sucks?
Yeah. I mean, you just don't know. I mean, and you said something earlier, Aaron, that I think is the key. I think the key is to like be yourself mm-hmm. and attempt to write a book that you would buy straight right. up. Like no other criteria. Don't worry about Matt. Don't worry about Doug. It's what would Aaron pick off the rack and what would Aaron enjoy? And if you can accomplish that, you've got something that somebody else is going to enjoy.
Right. That goes back to the whole beginning part where it's like, well, doesn't that mean creativity is natural? Because if that's what you're feeding into and it's like, okay, well, this is something that I would pick up and buy. That's blending back into that creativity.
Well, and I think what you're saying, there is some truth to, right? Like everybody go, man, I would really like to watch a really cool Batman film where he fights the Joker. Okay, it's
right.
easy to say that part, and it's easy to imagine and how good that could be, right? Mm-hmm. But the three of us know how hard it is to pull that off.
Yeah.
The execution of that is just, you know, as we've said, it's painful and joyous and, you know, all at the same time. And you're writing it going, I think this might suck. I think this might suck. I think this might suck.
Or so, nowadays, it doesn't even matter if it's good.
Right.
They're still going to tear you apart because you tried it.
Well, and there's some truth that one of the best pieces of advice that Brian ever gave me when I was first starting out was his philosophy is he wants to create something that people either love or hate.
Yep.
If there's anything in between, he considers it a failure. If you walk up and you're like, what did you think about the first issue of Black Panther? And you're like, he's like, I failed. I either want you to love it or hate it.
Yep.
And that has helped me throughout my entire career.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because it either sticks with a person or it doesn't. Right. Actually, either way, if they loved it or hate it, that sticks with you. Mm-hmm. That in between makes it forgettable.
Yeah.
That's good. I should write that down. Dang. That's good. Write that down.
Put it on the board.
You are recording this, right?
Yes. What happens after you get your project accepted? Like, what's next? I don't think everybody's ever really, we never hear about that.
Well, I mean, then you've got to get, you know,
then you got to do the thing, Aaron. That's hard part.
I think there's a time where you take 24 hours and you simmer in the excitement and the terror, all of it at once, right? And then you got to push all that aside and do exactly what Matt just said. Then you've got to start delivering on what you promised. And that's the fight, right? I mean, we just talked about, you know, the execution of an idea is the toughest part. And so now you've got to get into that fight and keep your head straight on you're writing for yourself or you're creating for yourself and fight off those demons of the imposter syndrome of trying to write for everybody else versus yourself. You know, oh, I want this to appeal to more people. Oh, that's always every time I've ever done that, it's failed. You know, I've done subpar work.
God, dude, that another one that just needs to be looped.
I feel like all I imagine is Doug playing Eye of the Tiger.
Shadow boxes.
There's a lot of music involved. Yeah. There's days where you're pounding your fist on the desk because you know everything you're typing or drawing is horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there's days where you're crying because everything is perfect. And then you read it the next day and you're like, oh my God, why was I crying? This is horrible. You know,
it's
constant, like, and yeah, it's getting into the execution of it. And like, you have to deliver now and you've got to sit down and you got to work hard at it.
Yeah.
And you know, that's, you know, I mean, you're talking about hours and hours and some scripts, you know, I've written a script that was, you know, I thought was good in a week. I've written a horrible script that took me 6 weeks. You know, so it's just like you got to dive in there and you don't know what it's going to look like. And it's, you know, I know that's terrifying at the same time. But yeah, just like Matt said, I mean, then you got to just sit down and do the work. Like you got to deliver.
So you do the work. What happens when you do the work? What comes after that?
People hate
like,
it.
Before that, before people can even
Twitter gets a hold of it. That's so, what happens.
So you finish your part. You know, the artists finish their part. The books come together. Where does it go? Like, does it go through another set of eyes? Or what does that look like if you're specifically image? We'll talk about that.
Right. Image is usually pretty hands-off on that kind of stuff. You know, they're going to kind of let you sink or swim on your own. So, you know, for me, like, I'm really collaborative with my creative team. So I work really close with everybody. And that's, you know, the artist, the colorist, the letterer, we all work really closely trying to deliver the best book we possibly can. Once we've got that put together, like I'll run it past a copy editor, you know, just to make sure I'm not making any like stupid errors. Right. And then you got to put on your analytical hat and you got to take off the creative hat because I don't know about, you know, I'm sure you guys are the same way, but like, if you give me a chance to rewrite the dialogue for a comic, I'll do it every time.
Yep.
Every single time. So you got to get to a point to where like, after you've gotten the copy editor done, right? You go, okay, I'm going to reread this from an analytical standpoint to make sure the balloons are in the right spot, the tails are pointed to the right characters, but I can't rewrite it. I'm not going to like it, but I can't rewrite it.
Oof.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why we have, when me and Aaron finish a book, we both sit through it and we'll read through the entire book over Skype or whatever.
And try to catch those dumb errors.
And see what we, you know, if something needs to be moved, all the little editing stuff like that. But like, if Aaron starts going too far into like, I'm going to rewrite
like
that.
Like you just said, it's I'm going to rewrite it if you give me a chance.
Yeah. You know, because I know he'll, if I sit there and say, oh, I'm going to redraw this panel, he'll be like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
I already know you.
For God's sake,
I already know he would. We're both sinking with this ship. That's how it's going to work.
You know, you just have to accept that it's as good as it's going to get at that moment.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and kind of move on. And that's never a good, you know, that's never an easy task. Mm-hmm. And then normally, like, then you're setting it up for image, you know, and I think different creators set it up in different ways. I'm very OCD about how the comic looks. So I send them print ready files. So then I'm combining everything, making sure it's a PDF, it's printable, that kind of stuff.
Do you combine their ads or like whatever ads go in the book? I'm just curious
only if we're doing our own ads.
Gotcha.
A lot of times, like you can just send it to Image and go, hey, whatever ads you want to put in the back of the book, that's fine.
Gotcha.
You know, you don't worry about that. And then their production team gets a hold of it and they, you know, do whatever fancy magic they do on it and they send it on to the printer, you know, and then it's rare. Every now and then Image will say, hey, listen, we caught this, you know, we caught a typo or, you know, you went too far with this slang. You know,
and he's like they did look.
Yeah.
Oh, good. I was testing to make sure you were doing your job.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, there's going to be times where your character talks a certain way and it's not grammatically correct, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so they'll, you know, back when they had Melissa Gifford working for them, she was their copy editor. She'd send you this list of like everything that wasn't grammatically correct and you could choose to fix it or not. You know, it was up to you. And so I loved her. You know, we still work with her today.
The character's from Tennessee. What do you want from me?
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, missing teeth in the panel.
It's like you want to have fun with some of that stuff.
Absolutely. Because it's how the reader reads it. They're going to read it with that in their mind.
And then you get into like, how are you going to promote it? You know, then you start thinking about like, you know,
oh, Lord, Doug, like, don't start with me.
Oh, I know. I know, it's like, what are you going to do with social media and who's going to help you and what do you think the right tact is and how many different retailers can you contact?
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, I talked to several retailers and like, oh, you should call us all. And I'm like, there's 2,000 of you.
Yeah. So
like,
can we get everyone on one group call?
Yeah, I would love to. I love talking to retailers. I used to be one of them. Mm-hmm. So like, I love talking to those, you know, those that end of the discussion in business.
Same
and
here.
Talking to them.
I would so much rather talk to them than just cold send them stuff because it's when you get to talk to them, it's like, you know, they're excited about comics too. So like, let's share in some excitement about this new project. I would love to see it on that shelf right there. Would you like me to clear a spot for you?
And that's I mean, awesome. then you also realize in that marketing part too, right? Like, I mean, then you're also who are you in competition with? Who's sending them an email? Who's sending them a PDF that day?
Yep.
You know, is Marvel sending them a PDF of all the books coming out that week? Oh my God, are they even going to look at mine?
Right.
Like, you know, like, and then oh wait a minute, and then there's Kickstarters and webcomics, you know, and you're like, oh man, like everybody's sending them stuff. How am I going to stand out? So yeah, there's a whole other side of it that isn't just the writing of the book.
Getting retailers to look at campaigns now is getting extremely difficult. Most of them just won't even bother pulling up the pages. And I think it's because everyone's on crowdfunding. I think it's probably different for Doug Wagner because you're Doug Wagner. us just, you know, cold emailing people like, hey, we don't know you. Check this campaign out.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. I mean, just think about like, what is it? 500 comics, we'll say, average a month come out.
Mm-hmm.
Just on the stands. To compete.
Right. It's a lot.
Yeah. And that's if they order them all. You know, it's like, well, they've got a budget. Oh, wait a minute. You came out the same week as Black, you know, King and Black number one. Oh, God. Like, nobody's going to pay attention to my book at all. Yeah. I mean, it's just like it's a convoluted, like, scary mess.
Once you get the book done. I love that he said all that. And the next question is, do you ever feel like you've made it?
Beards and Comics Podcast is a production of Catalyst Comics Studio. To get in touch with us, visit catalystcomicsstudio.com or search for Beards and Comics Podcast on Facebook. Hey, if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcasts. It doesn't sound like much, but it helps a whole lot.